politics, and presidential persuasion.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, I'm Bob Moon in for Steve Chiatakis. Here's President Obama last night answering critics on both sides of the aisle who are voicing concern about worse-than-feared deficits. He insisted spending and recovery are inseparable.
Here's what I do know. If we don't tackle energy, if we don't improve our education system, if we don't drive down the costs of health care, if we're not making serious investments in science and technology and our infrastructure, then we won't grow 2.6%, we won't grow 2.2%. We won't grow.
On this morning after the president's news conference, the question is, did he persuade doubting Democrats? Tamara Keith reports Mr. Obama faces lingering skepticism as he lobbies for his budget on Capitol Hill today.
Budget committees in both the House and Senate are working through the president's proposals and making changes to get it all to balance out. Senate Budget Committee Chairman Kent Conrad, a North Dakota Democrat, plans to leave out of the budget any new spending for the president's proposed health care expansion. And neither House nor Senate Democrats are directly including Obama's controversial cap-and-trade system for dealing with climate change in their budgets. On the other side of the aisle, Republicans say the president's plan spends too much, borrows too much, and taxes too much. GOP Congressman from Wisconsin, Paul Ryan, laid out the political realities this morning on CNBC.
I think the tax increases are going to happen. I'd like to think we can defeat cap and trade. They're still trying to run it through. And on health care, let's not have a government takeover of 17% of our economy.
In his mind, the final ingredients in the budget will depend on where moderate, so-called blue dog Democrats, land on the issues. In Washington, I'm Tamara Keith for Marketplace.
Take this, you pious politicians. That would be an apt headline for an angry letter of resignation from one of those AIG executives who've been chewed over for taking big bonuses. He's biting back in today's New York Times. Company VP Jake DeSantis complains that he and most of his AIG division were in no way responsible for the transactions that brought the company down. In fact, he points out he spent long hours away from his family, agreed to an annual salary of $1, and has worked hard to dismantle the company, which he says is crucial to repaying the American taxpayer. He also argues that neither he nor his colleagues should be cheated out of agreed-to payments. In his words, any more than a plumber should be cheated after he has fixed the pipes, but a careless electrician causes a fire that burns the house down. Nevertheless, he vows to donate his bonus money to organizations helping those suffering from the economic downturn. We've got a link to that New York Times op-ed on our website, marketplace.org. Wall Street's reacting positively so far to an encouraging report on orders for big-ticket goods. The Dow is kicking things off with a gain of 1.25%. Likewise, the NASDAQ and S&P 500. A scary number out of Japan today. Picture the steep curve of a descending roller coaster, and you'll have an image of the sharp fall-off in Japanese exports. They've dropped a whopping 49% year over year. Secretary of State Hillary Clinton is visiting Mexico today for 2 days of talks, as Marketplace's Dan Gretsch reports from the America's Desk at WLRN. She's walking into a simmering trade war.
The U.S. promised back in 1995 to allow Mexican trucks to haul cargo into the U.S. In 2007, the Bush administration launched a pilot program allowing 100 Mexican trucks into the country. But earlier this month, the Obama administration ended that program. Economist Sidney Weintraub is with the Center for Strategic and International Studies.
The U.S. consciously and deliberately violated an agreement it signed.
In response, Mexico imposed tariffs last week on 90 U.S. products, including cherries, dog food, and toilet paper. The tariff affects more than $2 billion in trade and hits exporters in 40 states. Eric Farnsworth is with the Council of the Americas.
The Mexicans have made very clear that the next move has to be from the United States because it's the United States that didn't implement the provisions of NAFTA like we said we would.
This dispute won't be resolved today. Secretary of State Clinton doesn't have the authority to fix a trade war. I'm Dan Gretsch for Marketplace.
Marketplace Morning Report is supported by Microsoft, providing people-ready enterprise solutions. Software based on how people really work. And by Constant Contact, dedicated to helping small businesses and nonprofits build stronger customer relationships through email marketing. ConstantContact.com.
Details of the new climate bill are emerging from Washington this week, and Congress is examining the implications of legislation designed to restrict carbon gas emissions. But how do we get other countries to do likewise? Commentator Will Wilkinson observes we may already be off to a bad start.
Last week, Energy Secretary Stephen Chu said the U.S. should be open to slapping tariffs on imports from countries that fail to implement their own carbon reduction policies. Meanwhile, China has threatened trade war if faced with carbon duties, which it says are illegal under World Trade Organization agreements. Trade restrictions tend to leave all involved poorer, making trade war a frightening prospect during an already immiserating recession. So how did we come to have the energy secretary provoking threats of mutually destructive trade sanctions? Here's how. Either all the big, carbon-intensive economies reduce their emissions, or there's little chance of reducing warming. If the climate modelers are right, we'll all be better off if everyone pitches in. But each has an incentive to hold out, since countries that don't pitch in will enjoy lower energy costs and a competitive advantage in international markets. Chu rightly points out that Obama's proposed cap-and-trade scheme will put American manufacturers at a relative disadvantage. So how do we avoid this and make sure countries like China don't get a leg up? In short, we can't. There is no mechanism, no global government, to compel compliance. And it's dangerously naive to think that China, who is the world's largest owner of dollar-denominated assets, is in a weaker bargaining position than the U.S. We poke the dragon at our peril. Cap and trade is sure to raise costs for struggling American consumers, but it won't much reduce warming unless countries like China and India fall in line. Yet neither the U.S. nor Europe can just force this to happen. If we try by imposing carbon duties, we'll hurt consumers even more by raising the cost of imports and possibly start a trade war no one will win. Chu's remarks highlight the fact that cap and trade is a costly, risky gambit. But now is not the time. Suffering workers and consumers can't afford to lose again.
Will Wilkinson is a fellow at the Cato Institute. We always invite your thoughts at marketplace.org. I'm Bob Moon in Los Angeles. Thanks very much for listening.
American Public Media.